It's Tuesday the 2nd of October and you're listening to the Red Army Roundup. I'm your host Paul Hinton and as ever I'm joined by Sean Phillips and Aaron Wren. Hello there, gents.
Hello there, Paul.
We have got a bumper show lined up for you this week. Unfortunately, we missed last week due to midweek games and scheduling. So we've got there's five games to go over. We'll talk about those quite briefly. We'll be doing our normal player of the episode. We're going to have to start calling it if we're not going to be weekly. There's been a little bit of news coming out of Sheffield that we'll probably discuss for a couple of minutes. We've had one, possibly two burning questions, depending on how we get on with time, and then a preview of the action coming up for the Devils. So to get cracking and go way back, it's like a week and a half. But Coventry came to Cardiff for the first time since pre-season in the Challenge Cup. Sean, the first couple of periods of that game were pretty tight. Devils took the first one 1-0. Coventry scored in the second to end the second period 1-1. And quite a tight game and you know, I think a few nerves around Ice Arena Wales. What was your take on the game up to that point?
Yeah, I don't really feel like we got going. We didn't look like we were trying. Coventry were giving it everything. You've got to give them their dues. They were hindered with a lack of a starting they didn't have their starting goalie, Mika Vikman, and with their backup in goal, they sort of collapsed around him and played a very defensive style. But they were giving it their all and trying to compete. But we really, really just didn't put anything into the game. And come the end of the second period when we were still tied 1-1, you had to feel that if we could turn it on for a couple of minutes, it was just going to be a walk in the park. And that's what it turned out to be. We just absolutely took them to pieces, to be quite honest with you.
Yeah, Aaron, as Sean said, the third period is where the Devils needed to turn it on. Got four goals to finish the game 5-1 victors. But for you, did the Devils really get out of second, third gear, or did you feel that Coventry tested us for the full 60?
No, I don't think so. I think all credit to Coventry, like Sean said, they played their arc out for the 60 minutes, but like you've got to be able to protect your backup netminder, and you know our arse is there for them to, you know, get pumped to fight four goals in one period. Like they were just completely out of their depth and they didn't have much more to give, I don't think. And you know, we put our foot in the glass that little bit and we took it from them, really. It shows from pre-season, you know, they run us tight at home, beat us away, and then we blow them away when it really matters. So
it's an interesting one, Coventry. You know, I agree totally with you both. Obviously, the back of netminder always changes the game, and you know they were a really hard working team. But I didn't feel worried. But if you look at the league, they've taken Nottingham to overtime, and having played the same number of games in the league, and having played ourselves, Nottingham and Sheffield from our conference, Coventry has set a point ahead of us at the moment. It's ridiculously early days, but they're. You know, that hard work ethic we saw is obviously you're working for them in other games, and you know, it'll be interesting, Sean, to see whether that's they're able to last. Whether it's perhaps there was more skill, it was just we didn't see it with Headley in net, or if they've just hit a rich vein of form early on in the year for a change.
Yeah, I think that the arrival of their new goalie will help. Miroslav Kapriva, we haven't seen him as of yet, but he seems to have a pretty decent pedigree. By all accounts, he's a bit of a loon as well. So what's new? Coventry have signed a loony goalie. You'd like to think that Coventry, or you'd like to not think that Coventry are going to use that, have a bit more Danny Stewart about them and be a bit more annoying, hardworking, and force you to go and get your victories, which they did in elements against us last year. They just didn't do it against anybody else, which is why they finished out of the playoffs. Why they finished just about in the playoffs and made T-shirts to commemorate it. So, it is going to be interesting, as you say, to see whether that hard-working style is going to be, whether they're going to be like the old school Cardiff Devils and maybe nick a couple of games against the big boys here or there. But I think they are all but out of the Challenge Cup now as well, if memory serves correctly. So, it's a bit of a blow for them, but hopefully they can, hopefully for their fans, they can sort of build on that momentum that they, they've gained recently with the signing of their new goalie.
Yeah, you know, Coventry, you sit bottom of the Challenge Cup group. They've got two games left. They're level on points with Milton Keynes and two behind Guildford. So obviously one of their remaining games is against the Devils. I'm not sure who the other game would be, but yeah, they're in with a shout and obviously two of the best place, third place teams also go through. They're not totally out, but yet it's not a good start in their Challenge Cup campaign, which, yeah, I think we spoke about at the start of the year, is going to be, you know, one of the two trophies they're looking at this year to try and, you know, get a little bit of success back into Coventry. So after the Coventry game, Devils travel to Sheffield, a team already with a lot of discontent, a lot of fan discontent, if you like. The Rupert brothers had just been sacked. Paul Thompson was telling anyone who'd listen that, you know, the team weren't trying and, you know, everything else. And that was evident as soon as we got to Sheffield. You know, you go to Sheffield, you always expect a tough game, even when they're not in form. It was one of those where you think you could even get a bounce back performance. But Sean, the opening 10 minutes of the period, Devils had already put three up and with another soon to follow. But that almost from the puck drop, it looked as if the game was only ever going to go one way.
Yeah, it wasn't a Sheffield Steelers team, was it, really, that we played? You didn't get any, like you said, go to Sheffield, you expect a hard game, and we just did not get that at all. You know, nice for once to not be totally stressed out going there, but yeah, it was a really, really weird one. As you said, the discontent among the fan base, they were obviously still missing Robert Dowd, missing Davey Phillips. Jackson Whistle started the game and had an absolutely horrendous start, and then was yanked after that, you know, around the 8-minute mark, just after the third goal, I believe. There was a small stoppage of play, and then he came off, yeah. And it was later revealed that he had the flu, and yeah, it's a really, really strange situation there. We'll come on to it, you know, a little bit later, but it was a walk in the park, which I've never ever said going to Sheffield, even in the game where we won, you know, we won 3-0 last year. It wasn't a walk in the park. It was fun, but it was never easy. Even the game we won the league, we had to work hard for it, and we were just so good that no one was going to beat us. But this one was just a doddle. Like, you look at the goals, fair play to, you look at the scorers through it. Dixon on the first one comes off a bit of a missed pass and it's a bit of a tap-in. Craig Moore is just a failed pass that trickles towards the goal. Whistle doesn't get anywhere near it. And, yeah, it was just too easy. Way too easy.
Sheffield did pull one back towards the end of the first. So the interesting thing for me in the second period was that when Devils started to coast a little bit, sort of about 12, 13 minutes into the second period, sort of Lord looks at the game and thought, not happy with this. Ben Bams had just covered a shot and called the timeout, and I thought I'd forgotten an icing when the referee whistled it. But whatever he said works. I think within a minute and a half, Joey Martin had made it 5-1, and then 3 minutes later, Steve Dixon rounded up the scoring. And, you know, Aaron, it's a bold move for a coach at 4-1 up to call a timeout, but it just shows, I think, or does that show for you that Lord's not, you know, not going to accept teams coasting and risking things in at any time?
That I think you've hit the nail on the head there. I think Lord, you know, he's in his, what is it, fifth year as a coach, and I it's his first year fully behind the bench, and I think he can see more of the game now. He can see when guys are slacking off and or a little bit tired, and he has that confidence to be like, right, I'll call a timeout now, get these guys on straight and narrow and go from there. And, you know, it played into our hands. We scored them two goals. Sheffield didn't, from what I read, anyway, I didn't buy the webcast or anything, but from what I read on Twitter and what I heard of you guys, that Sheffield didn't look like they were going to contend or even look like scoring another goal. So I think, Lord Lord Praise. There's no point backing off now. And, you know, it's their biggest, it's our biggest rival as well for Lourdes as well. Thompson, at the time, one of the most decorated coaches against our club's most decorated coach. You know, it's a battle of teams, but it's a battle of head coaches as well. And Lord come out on top of that one, and looks like he did for the rest of the season.
Yeah, the days of using the timeout in the last minute are long gone, and to see it executed so well was really, really interesting. And I think we are going to see a bit more of that. The game changes at such a rapid speed through periods, and different lines get high and low, and matchups change. And like you said, Paul, that Andrew Lord saw the change in the team, and snap, the timeout was it, and it just gave us that 30 seconds to regroup. And like you said, how often do you run a play now in the last minute of a game inside the zone? I can't remember the last time we actually, you know, a timeout worked off a face-off with a goalie pulled.
Yes, it's not a common thing, and it's such a risk, you said, to leave it that late, because even if you are chasing the game with 2 minutes to go, who's to say you're going to get a stoppage? And I think it's nice to see it used differently, and coaches not being as afraid to use it when there's been an icing call after a long shift, which I think sort of 10 years ago, if that icing call, well, 10 years ago-ish when they brought in the no change rule, if it was in the first two periods, you just sucked it up and played through it. But you know, we saw in Nottingham then on the Wednesday that towards the end of the second, Devils had a long shift, iced the puck, timeout called again. So, you know, two games in a row, icing used in the second period. So, yeah, it's quite an interesting little change. The third period, that game could have been 10 goals plus. If the Devils had kept going at potentially even half speed, there was an absolute Canaan of Sheffield on the cards. But the Devils backed off. You know, we had a game in Nottingham on the Wednesday, and yeah, I don't think you can argue with it. The game was never in risk. Sheffield did score one, but just that little bit of you, it would have been nice to see us absolutely muller them. But yeah, I'll take maybe 6-2 every time in Sheffield, so not going to grumble about that. Our whistle stop tour of the games continues. As I said, Wednesday, Devils went to Nottingham live on Free Sports. I think they'll probably be a lot happier with that game than the Milton Keynes one they got a couple of weeks before. But what strange game, Sean. Obviously, yourself and I travelled up for it. And Devils 2-0 up at the end of the second period, but almost in a carbon copy of the home game against Nottingham, where we were 2-0 down after two periods. And I think you could argue that we'd had the best of those two periods. We were 2-0 up, and you know, Nottingham had definitely had the best. They were, you know, gaining the zone more, especially through the second, and you know, sort of felt not comfortable, but it was a strange game. That 2-0 up, you weren't as confident, I think, as you might have thought looking at it from a distance.
No, definitely not. And I think it's, you know, you go into the third period not with a 2-goal lead, and you normally think, oh well, you know, at least we're going to take a point from this. But you just cannot rule Nottingham out in their own barn, and they, like you said, the first, I really don't feel like, other than the goal, we didn't really, you know, have much zone time, create many high quality chances. Nottingham boxed out really well and didn't give us the chance to do it. They, you know, we talked about it on the way back. They were sort of, their forecheck was absolutely out of this world. They worked so, so hard. Right from the get-go, the puck dropped and Nottingham's forecheck was very, very intense. They were putting two man on the puck carrier nearly all the time when we were in the zone, which forced us to not play our game. They didn't let us do what we wanted to. And that really, I just think that we were basically, they just executed the game plan perfectly, Nottingham. And they come in the third period, you could see that they weren't giving up on the game, despite the fact they were 2 goals behind. They come out and 10 seconds in, they score one, and then straight away you and I are just looking at each other thinking, yeah, maybe here we go, maybe it can all go wrong. And then we get one with about 11 and a half minutes left, and it goes 3-1, and you think, okay, now we've definitely got a point. And then we're playing away in Nottingham midweek again, and it all goes wrong, as is standard protocol. So,
Nottingham's first two goals, obviously the first one you said 10 seconds after drop at the start of the third, and
really
then
well
their
worked.
Second was, they won the face-off, played the puck through really well.
The second one was an absolute peach.
Oh, yeah, but my point being that was within, a couple of seconds outside of being 1 minute after Ben's Foley's goal. So you're the two times in that third period where the Devils should have been playing as conservatively as possible. And we can see it within 10 seconds and within a minute. It's
momentum switch. Massive momentum, yeah.
So Devils then, on top of that, ran into penalty trouble in the last 5 minutes. Well, that's 6-7 minutes. And with a guy like Luke Pither on the ice, it's...
We missed the penalty shot.
Was the penalty shot not after Pither's first goal?
Pass. I lost track. I'm trying to forget about it.
we also had a penalty shot where, as soon as he went down, I think I said penalty shot. And before the referees had made their decision, we both decided we really wanted a power play. Yeah, there was only, I think there was about 4.5 minutes left. So it was just
and we wanted. We really wanted the power play, yeah.
Because it effectively would have killed 2 minutes, taking us into the last 2 minutes. Potentially it was before. Who knows? These details should matter, but not on the Red Army Rounder. It may be something that we can discuss at a later date when we haven't got 5 games to get through. But around penalty shots and whether there should be an option to decline them or whether there should be something else on top if you don't score. So, bit of an interesting one. Luke Pither is something else in this league, and he's a goal scorer through and through, and got the two goals in just 40 seconds before the end, gets the game winner when I think we just killed the 5-on-3 when Richardson and Marina. Fournier. We're in the box. Fournier comes out for some reason, looked for a change when we'd only had the same two D-men out there for what felt like forever, but got caught. Pither goes past, and that's it. Disappointing, but if you think our first three league games were home to Nottingham and then in Sheffield and in Nottingham. Before the season, you'd have ripped someone's arm off for 5 points. You probably would have settled for 4, Aaron.
I would have settled for 4. But, it's just it's a niggling feeling. It's like, I know Nottingham played well and they're at home and all these contributing factors. But I was just 2-0 up, 3-1 up, and they scored 2 absolute wonder goals and back in the game and...
Oh, regardless of how good Nottingham were, I think they deserved the 2 points. I 100% agree with you. That was when they got away, and so I doubt it was shown on TV. But after the final buzzer, Laws stood on the bench, just inside the bench, went for handshakes, both hands gripping the bench, just staring straight down for a good minute or two. Sean, and that was not a happy man. As that buzzer went.
No, absolutely not. And you look at his midweek interview with Ice Time TV his post-game interview this weekend, and he talks through the week, and he says that we just weren't good enough. We made some mistakes and he wasn't good enough as a coach. And I think that you're not going to win all three. You're very, very unlikely to win all your games in Nottingham through the year. And it's frustrating that we led twice by 2 goals and came away with absolutely nothing. But that's a game which is going to hurt. And like you said, it's one that got away. We didn't get blown out and we can't just write it off. That's a game where we can take lessons from it. And there were some positives to take away from it. I thought Bouncy was brilliant. I thought he made some absolutely unbelievable saves. And we did get some greasy, ugly goals as well, showing we can score in that way as well. So, like I said, there's positives to take from it. Obviously, I'd much rather take a couple of negatives than the 2 points, but, it's a long season and, like I said, you're not going to win them all, and Nottingham away is not it's not an unreasonable game to drop, if you know what I mean, in the grander scheme of things.
yeah, and you know, different this year in that we've three home, three away in the league rather than four. Obviously looking to split it. If you want to split the series away, which is probably what you're always going to look to do against your rivals, and then win your home series, your point there would have taken us a win away from doing that. So
you can
see that's what frustration is. But you know, as you said, it's a long season. We've still got four games against them to go by the end of the year. And
hopefully we'll
be talking about it at the end of the year.
And we didn't lose to Brad at home.
We didn't, and they did, which is outstanding. Break the game very quickly, but baffling. But that team beat Nottingham, because you know, Nottingham, I think ourselves and Nottingham are playing at a level that is above probably anything that we've seen in the league so far. I think Wednesday's game was a bit scrappier than the one in Ice Arena Wales, but I think that was two good teams cancelling each other out, breaking us up, as you said. Nottingham playing with a hard forecheck. Your Devils for the two periods really kept Nottingham to a lot of outside tight angle shots. It's outstanding hockey, and really looking forward to the rest of the games in our series against them. And like, it's only a month till we travel there again. I think just at the start of November, we travel up. So massively looking forward to that one. Devils had the opportunity to bounce back on the weekend, first up in Challenge Cup action. In Guildford, Guildford don't do webcast, and none of us travelled. So this is as bad as our coverage of games usually is. This is going to be worse. Brace yourselves, guys. Devils won 5-2. There we go. That was it. Sean, it was from the highlights and from reports, people that were there and match reports, you know, it sounded like a pretty solid Devils showing throughout. Probably the two main talking points, one being the goal that was scored with Longley and Martin on the ice together, which was very pretty. And Mark Lewis's second fight in as many games, and dropped a guy with a couple of punches after not a terrible hit on Fournier, but a bit of a high hit. And didn't see it a lot last year, but you know, a new attitude from Mark Lewis. And a lot of times things probably went unpunished last year, which seemed to be our approach, but doesn't seem to be the way things are going at the start of this year, Sean.
Yeah, which you'd think would be, you know, a little bit or even more frowned upon than last year, given the fact that we're only, Lewis is one of our four import D, and we're missing it.
Sure.
Yeah, he's had three fights in three games, and you look at that game in Nottingham, he killed that penalty in the last one, but he sat 5 minutes for fighting. So I don't like having a defenseman in that enforcer role personally, because I think that when Lewis and Doty had that fight on Wednesday and they both sat for five, they lost one of the worst players in the league to 5 minutes, and we lost an import defenseman, of which we're already one short. I like that we are not letting things go and we are standing up for ourselves. And more importantly, we're protecting one of our star players. And that side of things is excellent. And it's good to see Lou get a bit of bite about him. So, again, there are some good things to come of it. The goal from Langley and Martin was just tic-tac-toe. Wonderful bit of passing work from two of the best playmakers in the league. So, yeah, all in all, like I said, we can't talk too much about it because we weren't there. But good to get back to winning ways and in a building that, you know, was a hard place to go. And we got absolutely, you what, sorry?
We struggled there last year, yeah.
Yeah, we did struggle. We got absolutely hammered in the Challenge Cup game. And I think did we win both our league games there?
No. Nope.
Or we lose one? We definitely won one of them.
I know we lost the one where they gave it to Rutkiss.
That was the
man of the match, Rutkiss, when he had an iced.
Yeah.
And I think we might have lost one in overtime as well. We beat them in the quarterfinals of the Challenge Cup, because we had them there as well.
And we beat them on Valentine's Day, because I was there.
Oh, your date night.
My date night.
I wasn't invited. Neither was Aaron, you know, we're hurt. I think both of us were too sensible to travel to Guildford on Valentine's Day last year. Aaron, just going back to Mark Lewis quickly. So Sean mentioned the issues with, you know, having a D-man fighting, but thinking about, you've Sean saying protecting a star player, hit on Fournier Saturday. Same thing, Josh Gratton. Not a bad hit on Fournier on Sunday, but that then led to another fight. Not only having a defenseman out, do you think it's a bit of a risk that it could be seen by the team that is an easy way to get Mark Lewis off the ice, and it could even put a bigger target on Fournier's head?
I can see where Shaw's coming from. Like, if you're going to have a player in that kind of role, you want him to be like they were in the NHL. You want him to be like a fourth line goon who's going to jump on the ice for 2 minutes and take a stupid 5 minute penalty, and that's that, and not miss him. But like, with the trade, I think with Gratton and Lewis, I don't think was too bad, because Gratton is one of Clan's like top line forwards. So, you know, we lost D-Man, they lost one of their forwards. But the one with Doty, you know, it was unnecessary. He didn't have to do it, and like you said, it could have cost us a lot more. It basically did cost the game, because it got Nottingham right back into it, and next thing you know, they scored.
We scored on the penalty following the fight in Nottingham. In terms of when it happened, it did get the crowd up, and but I suppose you don't know what's been said. You know, there didn't seem to be anything that sparked it, but
no. But I just think, like, at the end of the day, things I don't want to say like that's Mark Lewis's role, because there's a lot more to his game than that. You know, he got that edge, but he's also a good skater. He carries the puck well, and as we've seen Sunday, he got a great shot. But at the moment, things like that I do appreciate him doing, because like with our forward third line, Farina, who would usually maybe take that kind of role and do something like that, and it's not as costly, he's out. So it kind of does fall back onto the responsibility of Mark Lewis. And Mark Lewis, he didn't have many fights last year. He had a couple a year before, but Mark Lewis has always been one of the guys you can turn on and look up to, and he's got the mentality that you touch one of my players and I don't care who you are, how big you are, or how small you are, I'm taking your head off, and you coming in the box with me for that. So, like, I can appreciate why he's done it, and maybe when Farina's back healthy and he could probably contribute to that, we won't see her as much. But and another thing is a heat of the moment thing. As you two were talking, I was scrolling through Facebook and I come across the fight of in Guildford, and at full speed, it looks nasty. And you could see why Lewis reacted the way he did. And he basically showed that guy, don't do that again. And it worked. But I think Mark Lewis is the type of player, he needs to count to 10 before making a decision. And he obviously haven't done that. He haven't done that much, but I don't mind anyway. It's a little bit entertaining, and it haven't cost us too much yet. So,
and I think you made a really good point there, that we talk about whether we prefer it to be a forward, whether we you want it to be someone on third, fourth line. You know, at the end of the day, both, especially the two against Guildford and Brayhead, Mark Lewis has been stood next to the incident both times. He's been the closest player to it. So you could have had a fourth line full of knuckle draggers, but if they were sat on the bench and Mark Lewis is next to the incident, I don't think it would have made any difference. As you said, he reacted. So that's just the way it is. And I think if you boil it all the way down, if Fournier is going to be out there getting targeted, I don't mind too much losing Mark Lewis for 5 minutes every now and again. If he puts a marker down to say don't touch him again. It never did Wayne Gretzky any harm having a protector. So, and the Brayhead game, we keep calling them Brayhead, and they'll carry, especially when they play like they did on Sunday, they'll definitely keep being called Brayhead. The Glasgow Clan came to Cardiff for the first time. And wow, what a game for them not to remember. It feels a bit like when we saw about Milton Keynes, just a team that just seemed totally out of their depth, but not one that were massively short bench that you thought were trying, just couldn't cope with us all night, Sean.
Man for man, the worst team we've seen, or the worst performance we've seen in the whole of the season. You know, you look at Milton Keynes. Milton Keynes, you've got to give it to them. We did absolutely blown away. They had 13 skaters. Bread were far more equipped to deal with us, and they still got absolutely blown away and played off the ice. So man for man, terrible. Didn't think the goalie was particularly good.
Good things really... about him around the league as well.
Yeah, and the same, but then we, you know, the same as Killeen and Milton Keynes, and he's gone on since to have some absolute worldies. So, yeah, it's difficult you'd be harder pressed to say things that Glasgow did right in that game, because they were just awful. The one positive was the finish from Josh Grattan in the first period, in the second period, which was, you know, it was just a top shelf, top bins goal. And other than that, they didn't really offer us, you know, much of a challenge. I thought it was far too easy. It sucked, really.
I think the biggest takeaways from the game, we've already discussed Mark Lewis getting his fight. He topped those up with a really nice goal. Aaron also mentioned we saw how good his shot is, and an assist to get his Gordie Howe hat-trick. But was denied his man of the match. I think he would have lost it either way. Craig Moore getting his first home league goal for the Devils. And then Tom Zruck is getting his first competitive goal for us, and followed that up with a couple of assists as well. With three goals coming from that fourth line, with Myers, Zruck, and Moore combining, with Myers scoring on the power play in the third. So, you know, good for them to be getting a lot of ice time, Sean. Aaron, I'll speak to. You're good to see a lot of ice time for the fourth line, as well as, you know, seeing some power play minutes in that third period.
It just proves that it works. Like, you've got Matthew Myers in that centre, who is pretty good at his face-offs. He's very good defensively. He is one of the best shutdown players we have. Great in the corners. And he got that experience. So when you've got all that and you've got two guys either side of him who one are quick as hell and they chase everything down like dogs, things like that are going to happen. Yeah, you might find them out of position every so often, but I think the more they play on that line with Matthew Myers and that experience, the more they'll pick things up from Matthew, and it'll turn into a great line. And it proves that Sunday. Bray had been a great team, but look what happened. All three of them scored goals. Two of them had more multi-point games. I think all three of them had multi-point games. It's just great to see. But I just hope Lord sees that and he tries to roll that fourth line a lot more than what he tends to. I think when our backs are up against the wall a little bit, he does shorten our bench slightly and just runs the three in, or maybe runs a fourth line with like someone double shifting or something like that, and it's still effective because you're still getting some guys rest. But I think the more you run that fourth line, the more the younger guys are going to get that experience, and the more things are going to pick up. And you know, it just sucks that our league is so based on winning the actual league, because if this was like the NHL, where playoffs was the most important trophy, I don't think you'd see Moore and Ruckus on our bench as often as they are. And
I think that's a really good point. Is, you know, something that Todd Kalman definitely has alluded to, that there's so much less scope to give your fourth line ice time, you know, to have a young D man out there, and to give your backups like Tom Moody ice time. I think for me, I think we would be seeing the fourth line a lot more. If it wasn't for the fact that we were missing an import in Justin Farina. I think, especially against your Nottinghams, and not so far against your Nottinghams, the way the games have gone. But I think, you know, you said Moore and Rutkiss, both relatively young, both under 23s, do get caught out of position from time to time. And, you know, it's more likely to be punished against those teams. And I think if there was another player that could play a regular shift alongside Myers and then alternate Moore and Rutkiss, I don't think there'd be much of a hesitation in them playing regularly at all, whether that be Josh Batch coming back or if he stays on D, another import sitting in there. But, you know, I think it is important. I think we shortened the bench against Nottingham again. Late it was we were still out in the fourth line through the second, but you know, I think Nottingham rolled theirs all game. And it's, there's a few times you never know. It's if you roll your fourth line all game, Sean, and then one of your youngsters makes a mistake, you might get called out for that. It's a lot easier to point that as being a mistake than saying, ah, they were tired because everyone asked an extra shift. It's, you've got to be a difficult call to make, do you think?
Yeah, I suppose there's that way of looking at it. You know, it's, I don't remember the fourth line getting that much, but you look at that third period in Nottingham and you think you throw that fourth line up there once or twice more during the game. And, you know, we ended up conceding twice or, you know, losing two goal leads with the other guys out there. So why not throw those out? I think we should roll those guys out there and, you know, come the end of the game, if Martin's got a bit more in the tank, Langley's got a bit more in the tank, you've got a better chance of getting back in the game just because you iced that fourth unit. And like you said, the fourth unit might make a mistake, but then mistakes are going to happen through the lineup as they did against Nottingham.
Yeah, I suppose the more shifts everyone plays, the more likely it is that someone else makes a mistake because they've played those extra shift minutes. So, yeah, no, it's, I definitely agree that one, I see the fourth line more, but just trying to look at it from the club's point of view or coach's point of view as to why it's not happening. And, you know, I think potentially having two guys learning their trade, you've got to think Craig Moore played D most of his career in Dundee. So really, it's only his second year as a forward and he missed most of last year to injury as well. So, you know, it's two guys really learning their trade. And yeah, it's interesting. It'll be interesting to see what happens once we get up to a full complement of imports in terms of the fourth line. But on top of that as well, in terms of the makeup of the D, because, you know, as we're talking about Brits, I think Josh Batch has been out of this world so far on defence. And, you know, I think he's staked his claim to really say that he deserves that D spot over, not over people, but he's put his claim to say, you can bring an import to you if you want, but you're taking an import out of defence, Sean.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, we may as well just segue straight into Player of the Week, because I'm just going to throw out there now and say that Batch is my Player of the Week. I thought he was absolutely out of this world in Nottingham. One of the shining lights in what was quite a dull drive home. I thought he was absolutely everywhere. Played the right passes, skated like the wind, hit everything that moved, was aggressive. I just think he's done so much to his game in the last couple of months over the summer, and I just think he was absolutely awesome. He's given everything. He's made very, very few mistakes, and you know, he's produced a little bit. That fourth line, you look at that. He had the assist on Rutkus's goal. So I'm just going to stake the claim there and say, for me, it can't be anybody else other than Josh Batch this week.
Excellent. And, well, Aaron, can it be anybody else? Or is it Josh Batch for you?
It's not Josh Batch for me. I think, for me, I'm going to go with... I know I should be more prepared than this, but, you know, it wouldn't be me babbling on.
What put you in for?
I'm going to go with Matt Pope. I think he's living in a lot of players' shadows at the moment. I don't think he's getting the praise that he deserves. I think, you know, if you take a look at his stats at the moment, and he's running at 2 points a game. You know, I think if you combine all his games, he's been phenomenal. Constantly getting on the scoreboard. He's playing with two fantastic players in Bentivoglio and Martin, and I think, you know, he's not really putting a foot wrong, and he's staying in the shadows. He's throwing himself about. He's doing the right things, and he's getting on the scoreboard. And I think for a player of Matt Pope's calibre, I think that's exactly what you're looking for.
Excellent. And a decision to be made. I think I am siding with Sean. I very honourable mention. I just want to give to Ben Blood. Which, thinking of that, reminded me of the Brayhead game when Josh Grattan went back to the bench and eventually got called for 2 minutes, and the whole time Ben Blood was laughing, giving him a thumbs up, and just he seems to be, I think he's the biggest wine merchant I've seen in a Devil shirt definitely since Lichulip Infinity, but probably since Sacratini way back when. He's absolutely outstanding at it. But Josh Batch for me has been outstanding all season since he started on D in pre-season through the CHL, and he's just getting better and better. He looks fitter than he has done. He looks faster, as Sean said. And, you know, I think his part, I don't think it'll be the partnership that stays, but I think his partnership with Richie is really coming on. And, you know, aside from that, that would do his GB claims, to get into Pool A world of good if he could have a season alongside Mark Richardson. So yeah, it'll be really interesting what happens, but for now, Josh Batch is performing very well and wins Player of the Week. We have spoken about those games for a very long time, so we'll definitely only be doing one burning question at most. We will park the others. But just before that, a little bit of news. I said, mentioned is quite small at Sheffield. On Monday, announced that Paul Thompson had resigned as head coach, general manager and all roles from the Sheffield Steelers. We discussed how bad they were the week before. Sheffield had scraped a 3-2 win over Nottingham, who started their backup, Sam Gospel, and then lost in Coventry on Sunday. It's interesting. Sean, you know, someone, you know, having been watching hockey longer, you see Paul Thompson go through that massive successful spell with Coventry and going off to Europe for a few years before coming back to Sheffield and winning the league. What's gone wrong there? That, you know, as Aaron said earlier in the show, he's the most decorated coach in definitely an elite league era, I believe. So what happens for you?
I think it's a couple of things. I'm going to steal a quote that I actually reactivated my Steel Talk account earlier last week to get a feel for what all the fans were saying after we demolished them in that game there. And I think someone used the line that the game has grown and evolved, and the coaching has changed so much, and Thompson stood still. I think that's one aspect of it. The league has moved forward; it's more professional. The times have changed, and I think Paul Thompson has probably stood still a little bit. I don't think that's helped. And the second thing, I just think it's the hardest job in British hockey. I really do. It comes with all that pressure and expectation, and I think that you've got to be a very, very, very brave man to take on that job. Especially with who you replaced as well. They got rid of Jared Adams for what he achieved, which is a league title and a playoff title, two trophies in 2 years. And I don't really think that he's built on that. And I think that that's what he was brought in to do. So I, you know, if we want to, if in 3 years we won a league title and a playoff title, I think it'd be, you know, that to me would be great. But for Sheffield, it's just not enough. And it's, the expectation is too high, and he has stepped aside for personal reasons, and you'd like to think that it's just for his own good, because he just does not look a well man, as people have said. I think it takes a massive toll on you, that amount of pressure, and it's just that's what's gone wrong. I think it's just a very, very hard job to take on.
So this season, especially, obviously, a massive rebuild in Sheffield, just the one import returning. And, you know, the turnover of Ben O'Connell even as well, with Jackson Whistle coming in. You're always going to be a difficult task. Do you think expectations for this season were not managed in Sheffield, that, you know, they were still talking about, you know, challenging for the league, challenging on all fronts, but, you know, do you think that was ever going to be a realistic aim?
I think I can understand where Steelers are coming from, because they, you know, they've been such a winning club for God knows how long, and it must be hard for them to go up there and smash them and just about win against Nottingham when they got their backup in and probably not playing full strength. And but I think the fans, you know, I can't say nothing, because I've only ever been part of a winning culture. I've never seen the Devils lose. So if the tables were flipped, I'd probably react in, well, I wouldn't react in the same way. I probably would. I don't know. But
I think you probably would.
Yeah, I think, you know, like they went through a complete and utter restructure of the team. I think they kept one import of their team, and maybe recruiting wasn't done right, but I think that there was so much pressure on Tomo to deliver and come out swinging, you know, beating every team by so many goals. But the thing is, it's a sport where things, like, if you're going to rebuild a team like that, it's not going to happen. Look at the New York Rangers. They've gone through a complete overhaul. There's probably, like, I'm a Rangers fan. Familiar faces I probably know about five. And I'm not expecting them to go on and win the Stanley Cup this year. And I think, and that's the New York Rangers. Like, I know they haven't won it for 24 years, but they're always a team that has a lot of pressure on them. I think Steelers are in the same way as that, whereas I think Tomo left too much to do on his plate. He went for the big overhaul and the fans didn't take to it at all. And, you know, if I had people hurling abuse at me constantly after every game and giving me all this crap, the players might not be turning up for him. And, you know, it must be a really difficult situation for him. Like, I don't feel sorry for him at all because it's Tomo, but I can see, if that was me, I would have done exactly the same thing. He tried his hardest. We don't know if he recruited well. You know, another coach could turn his team into a team of winners and they could go on and win the Elite League. But it's just not meant to be for Tomo. And
yeah,
all the best to him, really.
I always struggle to feel sorry for Paul Thompson after the the goon line he sent out against the Young Devils team way back when he was in Coventry. I couldn't tell you the year, but it's that type of thing that you don't forget. And, you know, that, as you said, it doesn't work out. I think it's interesting for a club of Sheffield's size that, you know, Paul Thompson was acting, you know, he was general manager, he was head coach, he was the guy pushing through the youth development, which you can't argue that element of it, that, you know, Liam Kirk got drafted, you know, Cole Shudra and one of the other youngsters are getting ice time in the Elite League now. So, you know, fair play on that, but that is a hell of a lot for one person to be doing. And, you know, as you said, Sean, the league's evolved. So I think whilst it's maybe evolved past Paul Thompson, I think it may have evolved past the way Sheffield are structuring themselves as a hockey club as well. And, you know, you do wonder if, you know, what they're going through is maybe what Devils fans went through before all of our time. You know, it's funny when they win everything era of the 90s when the Devils never stop winning. And all of a sudden you see all these clubs come in and they're doing everything better and you just can't seem to catch up. And, you know, Devils were in the wilderness for a very long time. You know, with Sheffield's finances, you don't think, you know, it's not going to be that length of time, you'd think. But yeah, they potentially need to look a lot further than just beyond the ice and the coaching structure. If all that pressure on one man, is it feasible? Can you make a winning club with it? So it'll be interesting. Yeah. You know, Mark Patterson picking up as an interim, it'll be interesting to see whether they get a guy in to the season out or whether they'll almost write this season off with Matheson taking a player coach role and that, you know, give themselves a bit more budget for next season. It'll be, yeah, it's just an interesting thing. I think the biggest down for me is that we've only played Sheffield once while they were in this patch. If they do turn it around, it'd be getting that we didn't get three or four of the games in. Right, we've had two burning questions from Dan Acton and Greg Hewish. Greg Hewish is, I think, has got quite a lot to discuss and we have spoken an awful lot already. So I think we're going to push that to the next show, Greg. And Dan Acton, I think, Sean, there's a question around terracing.
Yeah. Okay. So Dan asks, atmosphere, do you think terracing would be possible in IAW? We were mega loud in Salzburg and Bern and what was only 200 of us max. Imagine 300 to 400 of us all partying all game long. The noise would be tremendous, and I, for one, would be there in a heartbeat. Paul, what's your take on it? Would it be possible, first to last, would it be possible?
I think the way, I think there's quite a lot of space in the seats. I think it's feasible. I don't think it'll happen because, you know, as Ice Arena Wales is growing as a multi-purpose venue, you know, terracing would have been no use when the boxing was there, you know, when the, cage fighting was there this weekend. There's darts coming. There's all these events. I don't think terracing lends itself to an arena that wants to be used for more than just ice hockey, which is unfortunate. But Daniel mentioned the noise made in Salzburg and Bern. Salzburg wasn't a terrace. They were all seats, and they were just people stood up. You know, it was called terracing, but the terrace was somewhere else. They never actually put us there. Something went wrong, as far as I know. I think it's not really to do with the seating, the terracing. It's to do with people being together. You know, you go to an away game, like especially the smaller rinks like Coventry, where you're usually all in the same block. Anywhere where there's a few hundred fans all in close proximity to each other, the atmosphere gets good. I think the issue in Ashwin Wales, and you know, the atmosphere in Ashwin Wales, I think, is better than people give it credit for.
Yes.
I think the atmosphere in the tent wasn't as good most of the time as people remember it as well. But being able to stamp on wood did help make it quite loud. But you know, people who chant and sing, they're spread out, and it's just the nature of home games. The only way to fix it would be to try and get a singing block, but you know, people have been in their season ticket seats now for 3 years, maybe. I don't know how long we've been there. And you know, would they want to move? You know, what if it doesn't work? You've then lost your seat. The singing block, really, it's going to have to be down the quiet end of the ice, you'd think. And will people want to watch the game beyond the goal? And it's difficult. You know, I think whatever sport you watch, away fans are always louder. A lot of people travel, but a lot of people who travel away always seem to be people who enjoy singing, clapping, chanting, making a noise. And it feels more important on the road to represent your club. I'm guilty of sitting watching games that are even quite exciting.
Yes.
Quite quietly sometimes. But whereas away, even if the game's not exciting, if there's a bit of noise going on, I'm in there. I want to try and out-sing the home fans. So I think it's the way people are seated rather than terracing. I don't think terracing would fix it instantly. It would be great to watch hockey on terrace. You know, I loved watching it in Bern, though it did feel a lot like a death trap. That was very, very, very big steps. Something a little bit safer than that, maybe. But yeah, I think terracing would be a bit of a band-aid, but you could fix it as the rink is now if you could get people sat together, but I just don't see how it's going to work. That's my quite long answer, sorry.
Okay. Aaron?
I think I agree with Paul, to be honest. There's not a lot
wow.
of...
Is this a first?
It's one of very, very, very few times. But there's not a lot you can do about it. Let's take Nottingham, for example. You know, it's a quiet rink usually. They score two goals and they have a fight in the last 10 minutes and the arena absolutely erupts. It's not just the quality on the ice, because you can't blame it on that. I think it's when it's a big game and things like that. If we played Braehead at Sheffield on Sunday or Nottingham and we pantsed them 8-1 and scored some of the goals that we scored, you know, it probably would have been an absolute uproar in our rink and things like that. But the game night atmosphere all contributes on game night factors. So, like I said, if it's a fight, if it's a big hit, you're going to get cheers for that. But the amount, like the away fans, when you go on an away trip, there's usually a couple of like the usuals who all chant and sit together who are completely spread out in the rink. You've got one behind one end of the goal, one the other. You've got a couple in one block, couple on the opposite end of the ice. It's absolutely impossible to create the same atmosphere on an away trip as there is on a home trip unless you sat together. And, you know, terracing doesn't bother me. I like to sit down watching the ice hockey, I'm not going to lie. I'm one of those lazy ones. But it doesn't bother me. I've done it in football a couple of times, and it does provide a good atmosphere, but I like a good sit-down watching a hockey game. I will stand up if something exciting happens, but I like my perch.
Aaron enjoying sitting down, shocker. Sean, yeah, does it just boil down to the fact that we need some better drummers?
Yeah, that must be it.
For about 20 years now, haven't we?
Yeah, they're not aging very well, those drummers, are they?
I don't know, the older ones are right. It's the young lad that just doesn't seem to know what he's doing.
20 going on 12.
Cheers, what's your thoughts on it, Sean?
I think that you could have it, but I don't really the way I just thought about it when Aaron was talking about the sort of the way the game goes and the scenario and this, that and the other. If you put standing in that game last year where we beat Sheffield 7-1 to turn the Challenge Cup semi-final around, would the atmosphere have been better with a terrace? Yes or no?
No, it couldn't have been, could it? Exactly.
It's going to be the same, but I don't think you can beat the atmosphere, and that all comes from just what is at stake? And I think that some of the people who make the point of, like, you look at Davos when they came over, and yeah, their block was great, but again, they were away fans. When we went over there, that's, I think, for the most part, all they were interested in was making noise, and that's great. I don't have an issue with that. It adds to a game atmosphere. But I'm like you, Paul, I like to watch the game as well. And I just don't think that it would add anything. I think it's forced more than anything. I think it has to be an organic thing. And if you automatically put everyone into one place, it just seems a bit, like with Belfast had Boomerang Corner because it was like a library in there in any case. IAW is not a library. It can get quite loud in there. And like you said, the atmosphere in there is quite underrated. So I don't think it would really enhance the atmosphere at IAW myself. I don't think it would make it worse, but I also don't think it would just make every game as loud as that Sheffield game straight away.
No, I think you probably get the quieter games, you would probably get a bit more noise because you'd have people making up chance having a laugh. But I think you'd also run the risk of half the rink being really quiet for the game, you know, whereas if all the noise is coming from one end, you're quite a new fan sat at the other, you might feel quite intimidated to sing in a quiet block, whereas it's spread around the rink. You know, most blocks have got people in there who are loud. So, you know, Nottingham did try it. I think it went okay, and then Nottingham turned the singing block into a gold block, and it fell apart. So it's hard to judge it properly because it was a very strange marketing idea. I think I can see why you'd want it, but I just think it's one of the enjoyment factor of away games is that you do get that, you get it more, you get that absolutely more. And you know, if we're being genuinely honest, people have a fair bit more to drink on an away game than a home game, which always makes people a little bit louder. Well, most people are. Some people are asleep, but...
Speak for yourself.
Some people just become menaces. Others of us just get really loud. Greg, it was a great... thank Dan, that was a really good question. Greg's, we're going to hold over. Also gives us a little bit more thinking time. It was quite a brain teaser. We are properly going to rinse through the games that are coming up. Unfortunately, due to Sean doing Vekwa, so being in Sweden for all of next week, and Aaron going to New York for all of next week, there probably won't be a show now until the week after, obviously. I don't know why I paused there, which just means we've got quite a few games between now and then, but they're not that different. So tonight, by the time you guys listen to this, so we're not going to talk long, Devils travel up to Dundee. But we also play them at home a week Saturday, so this is your Dundee preview for both of those games. Sean, Dundee seems to be doing pretty well this year. You have some good results, especially against Belfast, who admittedly were in a bit of trouble, but definitely seem to be a more competitive team than they put out last year.
Yeah, without a doubt, they seem to have really put a good side together. They had an absolutely brutal road trip this week. You have to commend them for what they came away with it. They beat Belfast, as you said, on home ice. And I think that the overall hockey operation there seems to have improved. And yeah, I think that's going to be a tough game for us. they are going to want to take a lot of wins on home ice, and it's a bloody long old trip to Dundee on a Wednesday night. So we need to bring our best, and Dundee aren't going to roll over and just let us take the game easily. So I'm looking forward to it. I'm going to be watching the webcast, and obviously we'll have them at home the week after. So yeah, looking forward to it.
Yeah, so a long trip, as Sean said, Aaron, but you know, on a Wednesday, it doesn't impact on with a game on either side. So do you think potentially that lessens the travel impact, that you're not going off the back of a game or worrying about when the next night?
Yeah, I suppose you either side, you get to relax a little bit, and you know, the travel won't be so severe. I don't know if the team is driving or flying or whatever, but it could be an exciting one. They've got a couple of good players. The results coming out fine, and Pacha and is, you know, he's been around the league a couple of years, and he did well with Manchester, and now he seems to be doing the same with Dundee. So
yeah, be a good game. And then on Saturday at home, came to Manchester Storm. Really interesting. I think in the pre-season discussion we had, said that your Manchester maybe looked like they'd taken a little bit of a step back from the squad they had last year. They got their first victory in Sheffield since they reformed in the Challenge Cup. They've beaten Dundee, but Aaron, on Sunday they lost 7-2 in Fife, which a bit of a surprise result, and maybe difficult to tell. And they've also lost 4-2 to Brayhead, just noticed. So what are you expecting from Manchester, Aaron?
A surprise against Fife. They were a good team last year. They ran us close to the title. Picked up a couple of good guys. I don't think that it's a surprise at all. Fife are one of the better teams in the league, and well, especially playing in the Scottish Conference and stuff, understandably, and they probably haven't played the opposition that we have, but I think Fife are a good team.
To win 7-2 is, you know, a big result. And when you think Manchester were there or thereabouts last year as well, so not a surprise that they lost to them, but that it was such a heavy result.
Yeah. I don't know. I've never been a fan of Manchester, to be honest. I think their recruiting has been decent, but that comes from mostly Patcher. But I'm not too worried about that game. It'd be different if we are home, aren't we?
Yes.
Yeah, that's right then. Best double check. It'd be different if we were away, because, you know, we know what it's like to play on that kind of ice when we had our own tent without walls. So yeah, we're at home. We're on home ice. We haven't lost at home yet, touch wood. Easy game.
We're going to cut you off there. We struggled against Manchester last year, Sean. Are you worried about the same?
It's difficult to say. They put us together a reasonable squad. I think Mike Hammond came back from injury this weekend, just gone, and as you said, they went up to Fife and got absolutely pumped. They're just going to work hard and try and force us into making mistakes, and they seem to have a solid lineup. If you're, again, this league, you seem to be hearing a lot of good things about the goalies, and Manchester's is no exception. He's had a couple of good reviews, and it's we say, Paul, every game's a big game. It's a long old season, and to go the distance, you've got to win almost all your home games. So yeah, it's a good test for us against another one of the smaller outfits. But it's a game we got to win. It's a home game. So and Brian Finity as well. So you know, he's quite an experienced coach these days, and he'll come in with a game plan.
Yep, and following Storm, day off on Sunday for the Devils to get ready to travel over to Sweden, and for you, Sean, to get ready.
Hey.
Head to Växjö and play them in the Vida Arena on Tuesday, second year in a row. Very different for Växjö this year. Last year they were, I can't remember, they were totally through, or they were practically through by the time they came to Cardiff. This year they've lost three of their four games so far, and actually trail Salzburg by 6 points. So your Växjö need two regulation wins against us and hope that Bern do the same to Salzburg in both of their games. So, are Vekwa likely to be writing off the CHL, do you think, Sean, or are you worried that they're going to be going hell for leather to do all they can to, you know, last year's finalists, to try and get out of the group?
Yeah, I think they're going to take it seriously. I think they're going to absolutely pummel us into the ground.
You're going over there with a lot of hope, then.
Well, you know, it's another holiday, isn't it, really? And I didn't think that I didn't think maybe it might not be the situation, and Vekwa would have already basically qualified, and we could be in with a repeat of what happened last year. And we gave him a good game last year, so, I think when I booked the trip, I was a bit more optimistic than I am now. But yeah, it should be fun. It's always good to go and watch us play against teams like that and see how we do stand up. And I'm looking forward to it. Looking forward to the trip, and just seeing how good Vekwa are, because they are an unbelievable team. And should be. I think it's going to be quite a long night, in all honesty. But I'm intrigued as to how we set up and how we approach that game. What sort of game plan we go in with it, because we can't progress now. It's done for us. But whether we're going to just, travel light, any guys with a slight twinge, if Joey Martin's got a bit of a bad back, whether he doesn't even travel, this, that, or the other, do you know what I mean? I'm more intrigued as to how we are going to approach a game, which means nothing to us and a lot to the opposition, because we don't get many of those, so.
I do hope we don't write it off. I think throughout this year, what are we now? 4, 6, 10 games in. We've gone for it in every game, whether we've had something on the game or not, and whether it's gone well or not. I'd like to see us keep that effort. Devils said we were taking it seriously this year. Obviously, the first 4 games haven't gone the way I think the club hoped at all. But yeah, I'd sort of like to see us put a shift in and try and run them close as we did last year. But I think, as you said, that could be a stretch. Aaron, you're in New York, so I'm not even going to ask you, and we really need to wrap up. We play Dundee again then on the Saturday before we come back on air, and then we travel to Milton Keynes in the Challenge Cup on the Sunday. Space is available on the Red Army Travel Bus. We almost made it through without a plug. If Devils win there, I think we're guaranteed to be through in the Challenge Cup, but with 3 wins from 3 so far, I think it's a lot less nervous than it was last year in the Challenge Cup. So I think that will do quite nicely. Thank you all for listening. Thank you for your burning questions. Please do send more through. We'll be more organised in doing these weekly once everyone's back in the country. So we'll have time to get through all your questions. So anything you want us to discuss, send them over. We'll make sure that we do get to them all, even if we can't do them the week that they're shared. Safe journeys to Sean and to Aaron. But for now, that is your Red Army Roundup. Devon inside, the Devon inside. Every single one of us, the Devon inside. The Devon inside, the Devon inside. Every single one of us, the Devon inside. The Devon inside, the Devon inside. Every single one of us, the Devon inside. Devon inside, Devon inside. Every single one of us, the Devon inside.